Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd. Exclusively on Paramount Plus.
The hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
From the world of Sonic the Hedgehog, a new hero arrives.
I am
ready. Is there anyone stronger?
No.
Tougher?
No.
Funnier?
I do not make jokes. I make warriors.
Knuckles, now streaming only on Paramount Plus.
Yes!
I may not have the power of college football commissioner yet, but I do, as of tonight, have the power of realignment, which, as far as I'm concerned, is like college football's equivalent of the power of flight. And we're going to do some work, some much-needed and much-fabled work realignment on college football tonight. Not to mention I got a whole lot of other stuff. We're jam-packed high atop a bustling downtown Nashville, Tennessee. It is Thursday night, March 7th, the year of our Lord, 2024. Let's just delve into pure fantasy land for a second. Forget about the rules. Forget about everything else. Forget about media rights deals. If you had the power to make your perfectly aligned sport, nothing's off the table, what would it look like? I will tell you mine tonight. Nick Saban's been talking a lot. He signed with ESPN, and he didn't wait long to start talking, and several things got said yesterday, and we are going to dive into some of those today. I've got spring practice intel starting to pour into Pate State headquarters from all corners of the country. All that, plus one of the worst bits of criticism that I think exists in the college football space about coaches and teams, and it's just time. Here we are, early March. I think it's time to address it. We've got to eradicate this from our psyche. They're watching us in Loudoun, Tennessee, Boise, Idaho, Cochran, Georgia, San Diego, California. It was a busy day for us today. I think we booked 9 trips today. So the Pate State Speaker Series, the whole tour, the whole spring tour, it's already kicked off, but it's really about to kick off. And who knows? Whomst knows whether we'll end up in your backyard at Late Kick Josh. Follow on the socials. I drop Easter eggs all over the place. I promise it will not totally sneak up on you if you're following over there. Okay, let's dive into this show. Producer Belchi is at the wheel tonight because producer Jesse had the audacity to live his life. He's getting married. Congrats and stuff. It is a spring wedding, so thank you. It's a Friday spring wedding. But he had the audacity to have a bachelor party, and so he's not here tonight. Belchi is. Producer Belchi is at the wheel. Director Colin, producer Belchi, Bradley the associate, everyone's fingers are crossed. Let's dive into the show tonight. We'll be fine. I think we'll be fine. Chris Lowe covers Alabama slash Nick Saban about as well as anyone on the face of the earth has ever done. Chris Lowe comes out with a long feature yesterday on ESPN.com where Nick Saban just decided to start going off a little bit, not in an angry way, certainly not in an angry way, but Nick Saban had a lot of stuff to say that previously you would never have heard Nick Saban say. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm certainly not going to read the whole thing because I don't have time to, but I'm going to paper pop. And I'm going to tell you again, ESPN.com is where you can find this. It is still prominently featured over there as of tonight. But I want to take a little portion. I want to know if you read this or did you see this anywhere yesterday. I want to take a little portion of this thing and I want to hone in on it a little bit. So this is from the Chris Lowe feature and this is Nick Saban being quoted here. Quote, I thought we could have a hell of a team next year and then maybe 70 or 80% of the players you talk to, all they want to know is two things. What assurances do I have that I'm going to play because they're thinking about transferring? And how much are you going to pay me? Our program here was always built on how much value we could create for your future in your personal development, academic success in graduating, and developing an NFL career on the field. So I'm saying to myself, maybe this doesn't work anymore. The goals and aspirations are just different, and that it's all about how much money can I make as a college player. I'm not saying that's bad. I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's never been what we were all about, and it's not why we had success through the years. So what do you think about all that? Because everyone had a really strong take that I saw yesterday, and I kept my mouth shut because I knew, hey, we got a show tonight, so I'm going to talk about it tonight. There was this, how should I describe this? When this got said by Nick Saban, there's this really weird misplaced aggression towards guys like Saban. And Saban is the biggest voice in the room, so when he speaks, people hear it. Nick Saban says, I didn't like where college football was headed. That had a lot to do with why I retired. And he started detailing certain parts. And I watched people, one by one yesterday, have this weird misplaced aggression towards Nick Saban. And they're almost like saying, well, he should quit if he thinks that. He did. That's quite literally what he's talking about. In fact, let me read this again. He said, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that's not what we were about. Translation. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that's not the college football I know and love, and that's why I'm hitting the exit door. Do you remember 2 years ago on this program? We were not the only ones, but on this program, I started to allude to big-name coaches that were on the brink of hitting the exit door because they did not like where the sport was headed. Nick Saban was one of them, certainly not the only one. I've said certainly three times on the show already tonight, so let's try and cut back on that. Belchie, that's on you. Let's try and cut back on that. Nick Saban's not the only one, but the point here is there's this aggression people get in their voice when they start talking about this. Folks just hell-bent on knocking down every support meme that's held this sport up, seemingly, or held the old version of the sport up. And, you know, they say stuff like, well, if you don't like it, just quit. Could there maybe be a little middle ground between I don't like something and I should just leave? That's the first thing. The second thing is Nick Saban actually left because he didn't like it anymore. Wasn't for him anymore. And then he didn't really try and beat around the bush about it. He just outright said, yeah, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying I don't like it, so I left. It's not what we were about over the years. It's not what made us successful. So then you got this other group of people who yell, yeah, things changed. He didn't have the edges he once had. That's true. They did change. He didn't have the edges he once had, and he retired. So there's this aggression that I saw from a lot of people yesterday, both publicly and talking back and forth with some people that may be on the other side of the fence than this with me. And I keep asking, what's the point you're trying to make? I don't get the point. We never get to a point with that. Now, maybe if Saban was still active and he was saying this sort of thing, maybe you could have the aggression of, well, he ought to quit. But it all comes down to me, at least, it all comes down to what you love about college football. Zoom this thing way out. Don't get in the weeds for a second. Zoom it way out. What do you love about college football? I got my list. You got your list. I think there's probably a healthy dose of overlap. But what do you love about it? What did you grow up loving about it? Is the stuff you love today the same things that you grew up loving? Because for me, in a lot of cases, the answer is yes. I love Saturdays in the fall. I always have. I love fight songs. I always have. I love rivalry games. I always have. So one of the other things that I loved about college football, you can call it childhood naivete if you want to, but I always loved the idea that in the NFL, the pro game that I watch on Sunday as a little kid, those players got drafted. They didn't really have a choice of where they wanted to go. And the Saturday game, the players don't make money, quote unquote, and they are playing for a love of the school. And it's very, very romantic. It's very Disney-ish. But that's what I grew up loving. But there was some truth to that. It wasn't total fantasy. There was some truth to that. And then the sport started to, I'm not going to call it evolve. It started to change, I guess. And I'm not going to call it progress either, but it started to change, and some things that used to not be all of a sudden were. There were other moments where the powers that be that control college football and college athletics had an opportunity to be proactive in things like NIL and revenue sharing and distribution of this and that, and they said no, all caps, N-O, period. And so all it did was build up water pressure behind a dam. which inevitably was going to burst, and now it has, and folks like Nick Saban are saying, eh, I'm out. But what you love about college football really determines where you go in this whole argument. You could either listen to Nick Saban, say what he said, and agree with him and say, I'm with you, coach. I wish we could go back in time a little ways. Or you listen to him and say, get that old guy out of here. That's an old way of thinking. The new age of college football is here. I love it. Now, there could be those of you who are in the middle who wish you could go back, but no, you can't go back. And so, you know, you might as well get on board with what the present and future reality of college football is. And then there may be like a fourth kind of person in there that thinks, oh, maybe this is a little bit temporary and maybe we may have some order restored over the next few years. That's me. I fit into that category. But Saban's been talking about this a lot, whole lot. I had him on the show several times, and he's spoken about this like every time we had him on the show. I've talked to him off the record about it, and he was never angry about it. That's what stood out to me. You think of Nick Saban as this really, really fiery, competitive individual, and he is. But whenever he talked to me about this, it would always be kind of with a shrug. And it was obvious to me. It was a guy that knew you can't stay in any competitive business or walk of life for decades and not have things change around you. Now, he had done a great job of adjusting. He's done as good a job as anybody I've seen at this high a level of adjusting and staying ahead of the curve. But this was one of the things that kind of struck at one of the foundational or several of the foundational pillars on which he built Alabama football. And so he said, that's not negotiable for me. So I'm probably going to be out of here. But it was always kind of a, you know, this is happening, and shrug, this is how I feel about it. But it was always, to me, it was kind of him resigning himself to the idea that that's probably what's going to push me out of the exit door when the time comes. Now, he never talked about when it was going to be. He didn't talk about that with his own people up until, you know, the afternoon that it was time to retire in most cases. But I'll tell you what, if you'll notice, whether it's Saban, whether it's Smart, whether it's Dabo, whether it's Sark, I don't care. Pick any of the big names, retired or active. You notice what a lot of these coaches say. They'll give you their take on NIL, portal, where college football is in general, and then they'll kind of make sure to add in. Now, I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's wrong. It just is. That's because there's a part of them inside who know, look, I'm in a competitive industry. As a head coach, I'm trying to make every dollar I can. They know that. They know that. And they're trying not to be hypocrites about it. And for the record, I don't think they are, in most cases, being hypocrites about it. I mean, it's totally fair to be able to make a point about what's better for the overall good of college football and also be a multimillionaire. You can talk both ways. It doesn't have to be out of both sides of your mouth. None of them, on or off the record, have ever sat here and told me or anybody who I've listened to them talk to that they didn't want players making money. Quite the opposite. Most of them, Saban included, on and off the record, have advocated for revenue sharing with players for quite a while. The difference was, like, that mechanism wasn't in place. And they knew when this thing finally bursts, and it's being held back, that water pressure's being held back, when it finally bursts, some of us are going to drown. Not all of us are going to make it. And those who do are probably going to have to bite the bullet and really grit your teeth on some stuff that otherwise you never would have tolerated because you're in the prime of your career. Saban's in his 70s. He's won more titles than you can count. So it's, relatively speaking, a whole lot easier for him to say, I'm out of here. What if you're 44 years old and you hate it? What if you're 52 years old and you detest parts of what the sport has become? Well, that's a totally different ballgame. It does give me a little comfort to know he's not disappearing into a cave. He'll be really active. And he's, unlike some of these folks in the room who you don't know the names of and you could never pick out the faces out of a lineup when it comes to talking about who runs this sport right now, you'll know Saban. And he's got a well-formulated opinion on everything. And he'll be active in media, but also behind the scenes. And I wish I could clone him and have 10 of him, because that would give what's probably best for the sport much more of a fighting chance in a room full of just clapping seals who are looking out for their best interest. But I read this piece yesterday, and I thought to myself, yeah, that sounds about like Nick Saban. And it's not going to change anything. It's not going to change the reality of what is. But I can only imagine Nick Saban assembling his roster the way he has for a long time and getting guys to buy into values and principles of an organization for a long time, then all of a sudden you're having to deal with, I mean, can you imagine some of the conversations, not with kids, but with handlers of kids? I can, because I've had them relayed to me firsthand from a number of staffs, Bama included, of what some of those conversations entailed. And what it used to be is, we've got a very, very in-depth presentation for you on what this place can do for you athletically, academically, 40 years down the road, here's how you'll benefit from this. And you scrap all that and you just talk dollars and cents. What can we guarantee you? And, you know, some guys are all about that. Other guys aren't all about that. And Saban was in the latter category. So he did exactly what you said he should do. He should retire. And he's out. We haven't seen the last of that. That Chris Lowe feature, quoting Saban right now, it's coming for more guys. Don't know when, don't know whoops. Got some good ideas on a few of them. And when it happens, you'll have some folks who say it's a shame that this sport couldn't get its collective act together soon enough to not chase some pretty good guys out of the sport. And you'll have other folks who say, screw them. College football, the sun will rise on college football tomorrow either way. And yeah, you're right, it will. Is the sport better or worse the next day? That's always the way I try and measure these sorts of things. All right, let's move on. I've got a loaded show for you tonight. Hey, I'm just going to reconfigure the whole sport in a second. It's going to be great. It's going to be wonderful. I'm bringing back some brands that you thought had disappeared, and in reality, in real life, they have, but not tonight. But in the meantime, thank you for watching and listening, if you are, wherever you are. Make sure you're subscribed to the channel. We have had a really good influx of subscriptions, and I think it's because I said the other night, which I do periodically, make sure you're subscribed, because a lot of you think you are, but you're not. So check on YouTube or in the podcast feed you listen on. Make sure you're subscribed. It's not going to cost you anything. Like, you're going to listen like you always have, but it helps us if you're subscribed. And I appreciate that. So spring practice is opening all across the country. We're going to be on the road a lot this spring, but I can't be everywhere all at once. So we're counting on our network of folks to feed us information. And I got you some tonight. I'm going to go to Arkansas first. We're just going to go all over the place. How beautiful was it today to crank up the internet and to have footage of Bobby Petrino roaming the sidelines in Woo Pig gear just fed to me? It's awesome. It's great. Not all of you share that opinion, but that's okay. I've got Robert Petrino and Sam Pittman in the same frame in this Arkansas practice B-roll. It's awesome. To me, it's awesome. Now, I was over at Hog Sports earlier today perusing. Wanted to see what Trey Biddy and Danny West and the boys have been up to over there. And I saw someone say something that I agree with. Arkansas's wide receiver core is not going to be the best in the conference, but it will probably be a little underrated coming into this year. And I agree with that. And that's some of the early vibe I'm getting out of Fayetteville. But what you'll see is you'll see a guy like Petrino able to maximize whatever that unit's potential is. So that's something I'm paying attention to with them this spring. Isaac Tiesla, remember the tight end from Hillsdale that we were all over 2 years ago? I'm still watching him. We have not sold our Isaac stock. We'll call it IP. It's IS, but it's IS. But I have not sold that. So Arkansas, keeping an early eye on Bobby Petrino's offense at Arkansas. At Miami, oh, by the way, Colin, keep that up for a second. The over-under at Arkansas is 5.5 wins. That's way too soon to be placing. Well, it's not way too soon to bet, because you can do it if you want to at FanDuel. I'm not going to do it yet. But just a question for you folks at Arkansas. If the over hit, you won 6 games, is that good enough for you this year? I think you know what I mean by that. Is that good enough? Remains to be seen. I will pay close attention to the comment section. All right, at Miami, we got to keep a close eye on Cam Ward. So Miami was in the quarterback market, and then they went and landed Cam Ward from Washington State, the quarterback. He flirted with going to the NFL draft, got NFL tools, comes to college, though, comes back to college, if you will, goes to Miami. It won't shock you to learn that day one of practice the other day, they haven't even wrapped the thing up, and I'm getting text messages from folks at Miami, mainly emojis, some inappropriate for all the right reasons. Cam Ward's going to impress you when you watch him in a camp setting. He's going to impress you in 7-on-7. He's going to impress you in shorts. And he's probably going to impress you a lot in football games. I'm just saying we haven't gotten into that full 11-on-11 fall Saturday setting where it's Florida State across the ball from you or it's Clemson across the ball from you. Right now, it's just Miami spring practice. So far, so good on the Cam Ward front. Now, sometimes when a new quarterback comes in and they're immediately given the starting position, you can be concerned with how that impacts the locker room. Sometimes it's a problem, sometimes it's not. I think down there it won't be that much of a problem because I think they know and are learning pretty quick. Those who didn't already know, I think they're learning pretty quick. Yeah, that guy's the real deal. Here's the other thing. Heard Shannon Dawson, the offensive coordinator, down there talking, and he said, hey, if you're good at what you do, locker rooms accept you pretty quickly. That especially goes for the quarterback position. Next up, speaking of new coordinators who used to be head coaches, Chip Kelly. You were just looking at footage of him now in Columbus, Ohio. He talked to the media the other day. It's the world we live in now. I got Will Howard at quarterback running with the twos to start spring. More on that in a second. And I got the B-roll right here. If you're watching on YouTube, this is him playing in a snowstorm at Kansas State last December. And now, lo and behold, he's the possible starting quarterback at Ohio State. And his offensive coordinator is Chip Kelly, who was the head coach at UCLA last year. So Ohio State fans see through this, I think, but there are some fans who are just reading practice reports who see Devin Brown's running with the ones at quarterback up there. Will Howard, the transfer from Kansas State, is running with the twos. I don't know that FanDuel would give me odds on this, but I'd bet a healthy amount of money that if healthy, Will Howard will be your starting quarterback at Ohio State. So I fully admire Devin Brown's statements that he's made, calling people out for just expecting him to transfer. I'm all about that. I'm all about the competition. They got Julian Sayin up there. They got Aaron Nolan up there. So I think it's one of the deepest quarterback rooms in the country. Question is, at the very, very top end of that, how good is the guy you're going to start, who I presume will be Will Howard? How good will he be for Ohio State? He's going to have everything he needs around him. Will he have the offensive line in front of him that he needs? That's the other thing. Very early returns from Columbus, but that's the early thing that everyone's talking about with us is, hey, it's wait and see on this offensive line right now. And at Kentucky, let's go to the Bluegrass for just a second. Do you remember who transferred there? Anybody? Belchie does. Brock Vandergriff from Georgia transferred to Kentucky. This time last year, it was Devin Leary from NC State. This year, it's Brock Vandergriff. Looking good. Early on, looking good. Now, if Kentucky doesn't win 12 games this fall, someone will come back and say, well, you whiffed on that Vandergriff prediction, didn't you? Well, number one, I'm not predicting anything. Number two, you can fall short of, you know, winning the SEC and still have a quarterback pan out well for Kentucky. All I'm telling you, which is the purpose of this segment, is they really like what they got at quarterback in Brock Vandergriff. I'm also telling you, and this is personal, I think one of the hidden gem steals in the entire coaching cycle was Kentucky getting DeKeel Shorts at wide receiver. Their wide receiver position, we talked about the support staff grades the other night, they really upgraded there. So Mark Stoops did a really good job in hiring. They did a really good job in portaling. They were 7-6 last year. Their 2024 schedule, they opened with Southern Miss, and then they got South Carolina and Georgia, both at home. Weeks 2 and 3, conference play opens. So we got a long time to get to that, but that's some of the juice, that's some of the scoop. And that's really early scoop. A lot of schools still have an open spring. That's some of the early stuff we're hearing. Probably have a little bit more robust segment come Sunday.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Hosts Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, it's time. It's time. I'm excited. I'm nervous. I am anticipatory. I need to take a sip from the chalice. The last sip from the chalice before we totally realign college football. Very ceremonial. Okay. So, Colin, go ahead and pop up the tweet. Sometimes when you guys send me questions via Twitter, I don't have time to put them in the show. And then some other times we put them in the show, but it's like 3 minutes or less. Well, this one's going a little longer than 3 minutes, I promise you. So, Colin, here's your endpoint. Ivan hit me with the golden question. He said, if you had the power to restructure all conferences to your liking, what would your perfect college football landscape look like? This is it, guys. This is the set of keys I've been waiting for. Short of being elected college football commissioner, I've been waiting on the keys to realign this sport because I don't like it right now. I love college football. I don't like the alignment. It is totally insane to me that the tight end coach at Stanford could throw a rock out of his window into the Pacific Ocean, but he's going to play in the ACC this fall. Totally insane to me. Enough. I'm also tired of numbers being in the names of conferences, but the conference is named the Big Ten, and it's got 18 teams. We don't have to live this ignorantly. We don't need this. So here's what I have done. I am going to realign the sport, and you told me I could do whatever I wanted to, okay? So I'm realigning the sport with history in mind, with functional scheduling in mind, with the playoff in mind, but prioritizing regular season Saturdays in the fall. And I also don't want any conference bigger than 10 teams. You know why? I have this crazy idea that in college football, everyone should be able to face everyone in their conference every year. It's crazy, but I think it could work, okay? So in the SEC, here's where I went. I took Texas and OU out. I took Arkansas out. They're not gone from the sport. I'm just replacing them. I'm putting them elsewhere. Vandy's gone. Controversial? No, probably not. Vandy's gone, and A&M's gone. So I've got 10 teams here. I got the two teams in Alabama. I got Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, LSU, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Tennessee. That's my SEC. 10 teams. That's my SEC. Let's go to the Big Ten. In the Big Ten, I'm probably going to get a little pushback from Maryland fans because I took Maryland out of the Big Ten. I'll tell you what I did with them in a second. Rutgers is gone as well. There is no West Coast team, nor should there be, in the Big Ten. So the LA schools are gone. Oregon's back on the West Coast. Washington's back on the West Coast. I'll tell you what conference they're in a second. There are actually 10 teams here. Now, Northwestern was tough. I believe it or not, I wrestled heavily with what to do with Northwestern. There was a scenario where I took Penn State and put them elsewhere, and I put Northwestern in the Big Ten. They've always been there. But you told me I could do what I wanted to. So I'm taking Northwestern, and they're actually going to be an independent. I'll talk more about them in a second. They're going to be an independent. Guess who's back? Guess who's back? The Big East is back in football. The Big East is back amongst us on Saturdays in the fall. The originals are all there. I've added UCF to the Big East. Now, I'm adding Maryland to the Big East. This is going to be one that's a little controversial. And I get it. Trust me, I had a number of different combinations, but I'm putting Maryland in the Big East. Really good for you guys in basketball season. Not that I care a whole lot. It's going to be a really good basketball product. West Virginia is also going to the Big East because currently West Virginia is inexplicably in a conference where every road game they play is 1,000 or more miles away. No more. USF, hat tip to Alex Golish and the folks down there. You guys are in the Big East now. And we're going to count all these as power conferences, okay? These are all going to be power. P whatever. Guess who else is back? This one is the one that warms my heart the most, okay? I have wanted to do what I'm about to do for so long, immunity. Without further ado, I would like everyone to welcome back to the head table of college football, the Southwest Conference. I watched Pony Excess the other night in preparation for this, showed the lady Pony Excess. She had never seen it before. 5-star review. Didn't like the way that the folks talked about Bobby Collins coming to SMU by way of Southern Miss. She herself is from Mississippi, the southernmost portion. So she didn't like that, but otherwise, 5-star review. The Southwest Conference is back, and I'm putting all the originals back. So Arkansas, Baylor, Houston, Rice. I got my eye on you, Rice, but I am bringing food back to the kitchen. SMU and Texas are back, A&M and Texas Tech, TCU. But you'll notice, if you're watching, I did add a team. I would like Oklahoma to agree to be in the Southwest Conference because Arkansas is there, and I don't want them to be the only non-Texas school. So I could have put Oklahoma in the other conference I'm about to talk about in a second, but I want OU and Texas in the same conference. That's a personal preference thing, but the Southwest Conference is back. I'm not touching the logo. We're not doing a thing to the logo. Okay, the logo, the W, no matter if you talk about certain unmentionable regions on the female or male anatomy, it resembles either. I'm not changing that logo. That W is awesome. It's glorious. It's wonderful. It's like the Super Bowl before the Super Bowl corporatized their logo strategy. The Super Bowl logo used to be awesome. Conference logos used to be awesome. And then people with suits that cost way too much walked in the room with their consultants marching in order behind them, and we don't get the Southwest Conference logo or anything like that anymore. The Southwest Conference is back. You know what else is back? The Big. Not 12, not 10. The Big 8 is back. You know how many teams are in the Big 8? 8. Crazy. Wild. I'm putting Colorado in there. Okay, and I'm putting Missouri in there, so Missouri is no longer in the SEC. They're going to the Big 8. Utah, once upon a time, would have been in the Mountain West Conference. Well, now Utah's at the head table. So I'm taking Utah, and I'm putting them in the Big 8. So 8 teams in the Big 8. I got both the Kansas schools there. Nebraska's going from the Big 10 back to the Big 8. Now, you Oklahoma fans, actually, I have no clue what you guys want. In this world, would you rather be in the Big 8 or would you rather be in the Southwest Conference? You may want to be in the Big 8 because I anticipate you guys thinking you'd get screwed in the Southwest Conference because you would think that the heart of the political power would be in Texas, which it may be. Look, I would guard against it as much as I could. I mean, I am reinventing the sport, basically. But the Big 8's back. That's not all. That's not all. I'm bringing another entity back. Pac-12 Pate has walked in the door. My first order of business as Pac-12 Pate is to totally wad up and throw away any sheet of paper that says Pac-12 because we are once again the Pac-10. The logo's back, the Pac-10 little sunshine logo's back, and it's pretty much everyone who should be out there and no one who shouldn't. I've got both the Washington schools, I got both the Arizonas, both the Oregons, I got the 2 Bay Area schools, I got the 2 LA schools. Voila, there you go. You've got the Pac-10. 10 teams in the Pac-10, all of them out on the West Coast. Arizona's close enough. And it's a concept that worked for a long time, kids, and it could again. Now let me take you back all the way across the country to the conference that Cal and Stanford currently call home, and it's the ACC. And it's all the current members minus Pitt, minus Louisville, minus Syracuse, and minus Boston College, who have been split up and largely are now all in the Big East. That's a solid conference. It's a solid conference. I suppose Miami used to be in the Big East. They're not going to be there. I'm keeping Miami in the ACC. But again, this is a 10-team conference. And as you can notice, once I've gone down this list, there are a few teams that have been left out. You haven't seen Notre Dame, have you? I am allowing Notre Dame, after intense negotiations with Brady Quinn, I am allowing Notre Dame to maintain their independence, but of course, I've got room to add them. I got several spots in these conferences that aren't full. I am granting Brigham Young their independence, but they could also easily go to the Big Eight. I just don't want to go past eight for obvious reasons. UConn's going to be an independent. Vanderbilt is an independent in my world. That's all I have to say. Like, I made them an independent, and if anyone wants to fight me on it, you can fight me on it. But Notre Dame, Vandy, Northwestern, BYU, and UConn, those are independents. I have ways to work around it. If Notre Dame comes to me and says, hey, we actually want to be in a conference, I can do something about that. It probably would involve moving some deck chairs in the Big Ten, but I can do something about that. But there are minor changes here. Okay, for example, Iowa, not in the Big Eight. They're going to stay in the Big Ten. They used to be in the Big Eight. Virginia Tech, not in the Big East like they used to be. I'm keeping them in the ACC. Northwestern and Vandy, like I said, are independents. But no conference is bigger than 10 teams. In every conference, your conference schedule will mandate that you play every other team. That means the SEC, for example, is going to have a 9-game conference schedule. That means the Big Ten is going to have a 9-game conference schedule. And you know what? At this point, go have your 8-team playoff. I don't care. If you're allowing me to restructure the sport, if you're allowing me to bring back beloved former brands like the Southwest Conference and the Big Eight, if you're letting the Pac-10 actually be 10 teams, if you're bringing back the Big East in football, honestly, I don't care what you do with your playoff. For all I care, you guys can go take the conference champs and have yourselves a little conference champ, national, semifinal, and quarterfinal. Do whatever you want to. Don't balloon it up past 8 teams, but go have your auto bid for a G5, because I didn't do the G5. I didn't go past what we would call the power 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, power 7, huh? The P7. You go do your playoff. I don't care at that point. Okay, I'll just kind of check myself out of that conversation. But I've got some pretty legit conferences here. Oh, by the way, nothing stops this from happening right now. Did you know that? Like, we could go back to this world right now. There are certain people in the room whose pockets are really deep right now who aren't going to share a dime with you, who won't let us go back to that world. But it could be. It could be. You ever notice, by the way, I'm going to sound 5 years old again. You ever notice that for all these moves that happen that are for the quote-unquote betterment of college football, no decision gets made by those folks for the best interest of college football that doesn't increase profitability? Did you ever notice that? It's why I give credit to Michigan or Notre Dame. I've mentioned this a few times. I love going to Ann Arbor, love going to South Bend, love going to those stadiums, because those are places where they actually put into practice this philosophy. They don't have advertising signage in the stadium. And if they do, it's very minimal. There are other places, not necessarily knocking it, but there are other places where they sell every available inch of potential advertising space because they want to maximize profitability and revenue. Cool. I respect Notre Dame and I respect Michigan for not doing it. There's money on the table to be had that they have decided is not worth sacrificing certain portions of what they love about themselves. Stands to reason, if you were really making decisions for the best interest of college football, there would come a time here and there where you have to leave money on the table for the best interest of the sport when you're making a decision. That never seems to happen. Every decision that gets made about college football nowadays, it always seems to come with adding another zero here and putting a green upwards arrow over there. It's a funny coincidence. Rome, Italy is tuned in tonight, as is Lexington, North Carolina, and Cape Coral, Florida. Appreciate you guys so, so much. Colin, did we have a question about these under-the-radar games? We didn't. Okay, so this must have been a word-of-mouth thing. The non-conference schedule is pretty wild for college football this fall. I talked about some games the other night that I'm looking forward to in the non-conference portion of the schedule this fall, but then I realized there are several more that I wanted to talk about. So I want to talk about a few more here for just a second. Florida at Florida State is a game that's all the way at the end of the year. It's rivalry weekend. It's week 14. Remember, kids, we have 2 bye weeks in the schedule for everyone this fall. Do you have any idea where either of these teams will be at that point? Florida's over-under win total is 5.5. FSU's over-under win total is 9.5. Also, keep in mind that if things go bad for Florida this year, then you'll have that whole toxic conversation of what's happening to Billy Napier. On the other side with Florida State, they could be making a serious run at a playoff spot by this point. And it's all the way to the end of the year, so like injury could have taken a toll. But just the potential, like array of different talking points that could be around both head coaches and both teams. I mean, if Florida State, for example, has gone on to make another playoff run this year, they haven't done it with Jordan Travis. Mike Norvell will then have done it back-to-back years with two different guys and had a lot of roster churn in the process. Also, Norvell would have had his name heavily rumored with the Alabama job, for example, and he re-ups with Florida State, and then he rewards them with another banner season. Then there's the other scenario where maybe Florida State falls off a little bit, and maybe Florida State or Florida overachieves a little bit, and that's a competitive game. There's no skill in predicting any of that, but I look forward to the game nonetheless. Much earlier in the season, in week three, I'm not sure if this has ever happened before, has Alabama ever played at Wisconsin? Bama goes to Wisconsin in week three this year. And I don't even know what the rest of the slate is that Saturday. Selfishly, I really hope we can go to this game because I've never been to a game at Wisconsin. And that's also, I believe, the first real challenge for Kalen DeBoer at Alabama. And so it's Luke Fickell in year two. And I think a lot of folks will probably overlook them nationally. I don't think Wisconsin's going to get a ton of love, but this is the kind of game, it happens every year, you know it as well as I do, where a team that's pretty solid or maybe under the radar, they get a shot at one of the big dogs early in the season, they bite them, and then all of a sudden they're off to the races. And if Wisconsin were to take down Alabama, they'd be off to the races. By the way, how about this two-week stretch for Bama? Bama goes to Camp Randall Stadium against Wisconsin. Very next week, Georgia at home. So you're going to find out really, really quick about Alabama's 2024 version under Kalen DeBoer. And they're opening spring ball there a couple of days in, so we'll probably talk about Bama a lot more Sunday. How about week one? Why wait? Let's go week one. Fresno State at Michigan. The other night, I was talking about Michigan on the show, and I thought you guys had some fair criticisms. Now, in fairness to me, someone asked whether I thought Michigan would repeat as the national champ, which, of course, my answer was no to. Like, I'm not going to pick them in March to win a national title when they're 128th in returning production. New head coach, new coordinators, new quarterback, new everything. But you guys pointed out, and you're right, defensively, they got a bunch of the same horses that they had last year that were responsible for having the number one unit in the country. I'm not suggesting there aren't good things or things to like about him. The question to me was, will they win a title? No, I don't think they'll win a title. But this is the first version or first chance we get to see this version of them either way. And everyone always talks about the App State Michigan thing, even though it was like 50 years ago at this point. But I'm sure as we get closer to kickoff of this one, everyone's attention will be on the week two game against Texas, and everyone will be talking in the abstract about the defending national champs, this and that, and Fresno can just float in there under the radar, and it's not going to be the biggest circle game in week one, and all of a sudden you turn it on at halftime and it's tied. But there could also be a world where Sharon Moore has his team up 28-0 at the half. So what I love most about these week one games, DeBoer will be this way, Sharon Moore will be this way. Anywhere where they've got a new staff, Jonathan Smith at Michigan State, week one, there will be conclusions drawn on these people at halftime of their week one game. It's always crazy, and yet it always happens. What about Tennessee NC State? Pretty sleeper-ish on the out-of-conference slate. Not for us, though. It's a neutral site game. It's in week two. It's in Charlotte. You know how I feel about neutral site games. But the fact that this made it anyway lets you know how I feel about the quality of teams. Two really good teams here. NC State, yet again, over-under win total in the 8.5 range. Tennessee up in the 9.5 range. Both of them have playoff potential this year. Both of those teams on the high end have playoff potential this year. And Nico Iamaliava, we get to see him start. NC State, I think, and I agree with them, they feel like they'll have probably a lot more of a no-name lineup from a national perspective, but a lineup of guys they know they can win with this fall. And week two will be the first chance we get to see both of them. And lastly, also in week two, Colorado's going to Nebraska. Colorado goes to Nebraska And Colorado will go up there a year after beating Nebraska at home. And Nebraska's sitting here with a win total of 7.5 now, which doesn't impress you if you're a Georgia fan. But 7.5 is fairly lofty because you know the history there with the one-possession games. You know the history there, period. Recently, Dylan Raiola, likely your starter, true freshman, starter at quarterback. And then on the other side, we got Shedeur Sanders, who people are talking about as a potential first-round draft pick this upcoming year. Travis Hunter rolls in there. We find out what that revamped offensive line looks like for Deion in Colorado. That'll be a really good one. It's week two. Don't have to wait very long. Also, you got the rivalry aspect. I mean, the history of college football, got a lot of chapters that could be dedicated to that matchup there. Let's move it along. What else do we have? Got several things, actually. I got to talk about criticisms here. Good old-fashioned criticisms. They're not good. They are old and fashioned however you want to. Let me take a little sip from the chalice. This is where I have to caution a little bit. Colin always has to catch me on this because sometimes I will respond to one of you or something someone said and I'll sound like I'm trying to be condescending about it. That doesn't sound like me. But real talk, if I'll go back and listen to the replay, I can see out of context how it gets taken like that. I'm extremely appreciative that we get to do this, that I get to do the show, and that you take time, especially if you're listening this late, you're like 40 plus minutes in. If you've taken that time, I don't care if you disagree with me on everything. I sincerely appreciate you giving us your time and listening or watching. So if we disagree, that's all it is. We're disagreeing over a game. That's it. Now, I may get a little worked up about it, but it doesn't mean we couldn't go eat lunch afterwards if you were here. So I'm probably about to sound like that, and I may say something that you're thinking, and I may disagree with it pretty fervently here on the next couple of minutes. It doesn't mean that I feel that way about you personally. I promise. I promise. With that in mind, Colin, here's your endpoint. We have got to eradicate a certain type of criticism that certain types of casuals out there are levying at coaches in this sport and teams in this sport. So the other day, it's actually February, so it's over a month ago, but I put this tweet out. I said, quote, "He hasn't won anything," unquote. That's being tossed at any coach without a college football playoff trophy, and it's insane. It's insane because there are three active college football head coaches with national titles. Three of them. Dabo's one, Kirby's two. Who's the third one? It's Mack Brown, who won his in 05. So it technically is not even a college football playoff trophy. It's a national title. Anyway, as you've probably noticed, there is this collection, this little cult of casual that just meanders around the college football space, and they look at anyone who doesn't have a literal national title ring, and they go with what I call 10 or trash syndrome, and that is you're literally either a 10 or you're trash. Forget about 8.5. Forget about 9.25. Nope, you're either perfect. You're either at the top rung of the ladder or you're trash. There are no other rungs on the ladder. It's insane. It's totally insane. So I humbly am going to come to you tonight and I'm going to suggest there are some really good head coaches in college football that don't have a national championship ring. Gasp, I know. It's crazy, but I think it's true. I don't even know. Sometimes I have to make sure people are serious when they say it. So that's the first thing I do. And they're not serious people, but they are serious in their emotion behind saying such things. So just drop the pen for a second. It happened today. This is why I'm talking about it on the show. It happened today. I saw someone say this about Brian Kelly. Someone just today says, Brian Kelly, what has this man done? What's he done? What's he won? Think about it. In any other walk of life, think about saying this. Diana Ross never won a Grammy. What has she done? Tom Cruise, what has he done? He's never won an Oscar. What has he done? Brian Kelly, two-time AP Coach of the Year. Dude was three-time Big East Coach of the Year. Took Cincinnati undefeated to a BCS game. The dude has a dozen double-digit win seasons at the BCS level and several more before that at Grand Valley. He is the winningest coach in Notre Dame history. Notre Dame's football history dates back to the Old Testament. He's the winningest coach in the history of the program. BCS title game there? Two college football playoff trips in his time at Notre Dame. He won the SEC West 5 minutes after walking in the door at LSU. What has he done, though, Josh? He doesn't have a national championship. What has he done? You would never say this about Diana Ross just because she doesn't have a Grammy. You would never say this about Tom Cruise just because he doesn't have an Oscar. But people say it. People say it every day. Meemaw used to always tell me, Joshua, sports will make you mad, but they don't have to make you stupid as well. Too many people who are smart otherwise are made foolish by sports and what they do to you. Lincoln Riley, they do the same thing with him. It's not just Brian Kelly. I just happen to have this thrown at me today. Lincoln Riley didn't go to Oklahoma. Lincoln Riley gets his first shot as a head coach at Oklahoma, and all he does is like average a double-digit win season every year. There were three consecutive 12-win seasons when he was there. Three Heisman winners the guy's coached. What has he done, though? Like, what has he done? What he's done is won a lot of football games. Is he the best in the history of the sport? He is not. Doesn't mean he's trash. Ryan Day. Ryan Day's sitting up in Columbus, Ohio. He's 56-8. He's a missed field goal last year against Georgia away from a national championship of his own. And I got folks saying, well, since he hadn't won a title, what's he done? As if to say, Sam Pittman, sub 500, and Ryan Day, those are the same coach because neither one of them's got a national title. Are you really participating in this? Please tell me you're not. Inevitably, I know there are some of you out there who are. There are some of you out there. I just participated right before I went on the show in someone on one of the social platforms here who put up a picture of Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly, and I did not plan on this. It just happened. It's our buddies over at CFB Talk Daily, and they said, which one of these coaches is more overrated? And I responded the way I always do, and I said, well, what are they rated? And I kid you not, the first reply was someone asking me, are you really going to do the same semantics thing for the millionth time? If so, I'm going to lose it. Semantics. Translation. Someone calls someone overrated. Therefore, I want to know, what is the person rated? Someone could call a team overrated. First thing I want to know is, what is the team rated? Now, if you listen to or watch the show or have for any length of time, you know where I'm always going with that. To be overrated, you have to be rated higher than what you are. Well, I got to know what you're rated. First off, and it's always very common with teams like Notre Dame or coaches like Brian Kelly, he's overrated. Well, where is he rated? If he's rated number one in the country, he's overrated. He's not better than Kirby Smart. I wouldn't take him over Kirby Smart is what I'm saying. But if he's rated fifth, or I saw Feldman the other day, I think rated him sixth, how am I about to call him overrated? And if so, what criteria, what metrics am I using? Like, how is Brian Kelly definitively overrated at number six? Did you listen to the list of accomplishments here? And you're not about to sit here and throw national titles in my face because Mac Brown's got one. Where are you rating him? You rating him top three? Mac Brown's one of three active coaches with a national title. So if you want to come at me with the what has he won mentality, as if to say championship or bust is the only metric, where are you putting Mac Brown? Where'd you have Chizik when he was at Auburn? He had a national title. And then 5 minutes later, he's out of a job. Is that the end all be all? Is that the only metric of accomplishment? Or could it be a little deeper than that? Could it be a little more nuanced than that? I'm a believer that it is. I'm sorry for anyone I upset. If you are a believer that, let's say, for example, a Lincoln Riley could take this year and take Miller Moss at quarterback and win it all, go to FanDuel and bet it. You get really good odds right now. You think that Garrett Nussmeier is going to take LSU to the promised land? Get pretty good odds on that too. I was looking at a lot of these odds earlier today. We're about to talk about a team in a second. It's A&M. And they're in the top 15 nationally to win the national title. But if you are a believer in Mike Elko, and you're a believer that Connor Wigman could have this year be the year he explodes, if you think that talent roster has underperformed because they had the wrong guy at the helm, and now they've got the right guy, you can get really good odds over at FanDuel right now. We're proud to partner with them. Had a nice 45-minute meeting with them earlier this week. Good ideas. That kitchen has a whole lot of smoke coming out of it right now. The kitchen where FanDuel and me, we get to go in there and we get to cook some stuff up because it's stuff that you've requested, so I know you'll like it all. I don't care if you don't bet. Frankly, there's a lot of stuff FanDuel is on the precipice of being able to do with us on this show that people who never wager a dime will enjoy. And of course, if you do, you'll love it. So that's our exclusive odds provider, and they're that way for a reason. We really appreciate them.
Must be 21 or over and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only, $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.
All right, last question of the evening, and then I got to roll home. We all have a bedtime. We all got to get supper. I'm no different. Someone asked me about a team we have not talked about in a couple of weeks, so we're going to do it right now. Raul hit me up and said, I'm in Fort Worth, Texas. What can the expectations be for the Aggies year one under Mike Elko? So quickly, let me tell you what the expectations are in the odds market. So our buddies over at FanDuel, they've already got all the numbers on Texas A&M. So in the SEC, they have the 8th best odds to win the conference title. Their over-under win total is 8.5. And they've got the 15th best odds to win the national championship. So not bad, not in the lead pack, but certainly a contender. If you think about that for a second, we're going to put 12 teams in the playoff this year. At least that's what they tell me. So if you got odds in the teens, like you're a contender. FanDuel views Texas A&M as a playoff contender right now. Translation. So I think they could be the surprise team of the SEC. Is my question. I'm trying to be very careful with A&M. Number one, because I've got a reputation of overrating them, which is accurate. That is accurate. And it's the model's fault. Like, to be very clear, I take absolutely no responsibility for anything that goes wrong on this show. I take credit. The model takes the blame. And sometimes Jesse, when he's in town and not at his bachelor party. So that's just the dynamic that we agreed on here. And as you can see, there's no one at the table that disagrees with me. Not a single voice at this table has ever disagreed with me on that. So I do have a little history of maybe slightly inflating A&M on here, but the only reason is because Jimbo underachieved. So I got certain things that I blindly buy into. A&M's had them, and Jimbo maybe I shouldn't have bought into as much because he kind of ankle-weighted the program a little bit. Well, he's gone. Is Mike Elko the answer? Mike Elko, early returns out there, as expected, are really good. Mike Elko, I think, is a player that locker room will fight for and go over the cliff for a little more readily than they did Jimbo. And I'm not saying they didn't have fight. I'm saying they'll have more of it from Mike Elko. I think there'll be more of a connectivity between Elko and his players. That's very evident from people who were on the ground out there early on. It's a top 10 talent roster this year. They did really good in the portal. He hired pretty well. I got him as a solid tier 2 staff in the SEC right now, and plenty of room to rise. And you know they play Notre Dame week one. So we've seen this before where a program kind of believes in itself, but then does something early in the year, week one, week two, week three, and all of a sudden they even surprise themselves a little bit by how good they looked. Well, Notre Dame's going to head down to College Station for a week one game. And if you land one on their jaw and you knock them off, and A&M's a 1.5-point favorite in the game, so it's not some upset if you do it, well, then you're kind of off to the races a little bit. And listen to this now. A&M does not play Bama this year. They do not play Georgia. They get LSU at home with LSU on a back-to-back road stretch. They get Texas at home to end the year. There's a world here where if Connor Wigman's the real deal at quarterback And Elko brought in the right combination to surround him and support him. That offensive line gets figured out, which is probably the biggest question they have right now. Man, like, A&M could be a player this year. I'm trying. You can tell. I'm trying not to convince myself in March to go place irresponsible wagers on A&M futures, but man, I may just do it when we end the show. Because I do think that if I'm circling some teams that are dark, I'm doing it. I knew I was going to do it. If I'm just saying in spring, reserving the right to redact this at any time, if I were circling some teams that had dark horse potential, that'd be one of them. I know you got to go through a mountain that is Georgia if you're going to dark horse your way to an SEC title. I know that. So it's tough. Like if they played in the Big 12, it'd be different because there's no insurmountable hurdle out there. But you don't have to win the SEC to make the playoff. So two things could be true there. I think they're a dark horse playoff contender. That's what I think they could be under Mike Elko. That's all. Could. You heard me, Colin. Could be. They could also go 500. Could be. Yes, thank you. All right, that's our show. Very solid job by interim producer Belchi and director Colin. Solid as always. Appreciate you guys so much for watching. We'll be back here same time Sunday night. Until then, have a great start to your weekend. Take care and God bless. Must be 21 or over and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only, $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, Iowa, Kentucky, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana, visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit GamblingHelplineMA.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts, or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.